Hello and welcome to CJ Evolution, the podcast dedicated to helping criminal justice professionals like you. Now here's your host, fellow CJ Evolutionary, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello everybody, welcome back, episode 71. I am very excited about this, today's podcast. I have with me Jason Troy. He is a top business and executive coach and sales trainer. He's a leading expert on human behavior, daring leadership, and relationship building. He has a best-selling book that he's going to talk about called Social Wealth, a how-to guide on building personal and professional relationships. He sold a ton of books and has been number one in four business and self-help categories. Now, I know some of you might be saying, well, this guy's a business guy, but it's very applicable. He is a business guy. He's a great business guy, but it's very applicable to the criminal justice field because a lot of you out there sooner or later are going to retire and get into something, and it's probably going to be business related. So, Jason, welcome, sir.
Well, thanks for having me on the show and speaking to your fantastic tribe.
Well, that's a good way to put it. How do people unlock? I'm just going to go right into it, Jason. How do people unlock success through their relationships?
Well, if you think about it, in my book, I talk about social capital, and it's really a conversation that we don't have. But, you know, everything that you accomplish is with or through other people. Mm-hmm. So you have to leverage the relationships that you have through your network of people and then the people that they know. And that's really how you navigate the world and really find success. Because like the old adage goes, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And that's the truth, right? Mm-hmm. Because you master success in life not by having to do everything, but by finding people that are experts in the field and them teaching or them helping, right? So it mm-hmm. doesn't matter what it comes to life that you want to do. Like, let's say you want to remodel the inside of your house. Well, if one of your best friends or extremely good friends is a contractor, like I had last year, well, the cost of remodeling your house is a fraction of what normally would be. So therefore, that is a major success that you can have through your relationship. Mm-hmm. So it really doesn't matter what you're doing in your life. You have to have these relationships, and I think that you have to build them the right way so you can access them, or you can access the people that you have in your network, meaning friends or even just people that you've just met, their relationships as well. And then you can accomplish some pretty fantastic things in your life and also have some, you know, amazing relationships that you look back on and are grateful that you've stumbled and come across in your life.
That's excellent. And I've always, and correct me if I'm wrong, I always tell people, students, because I teach a lot and people that I train is you are who you surround yourself with, correct?
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, Jim Rohn had that quote that, you know, you are the five people that you spend the most time with, which is true. And I think when it comes to higher education, one of the things that I think is a major travesty, and it's really funny because I went out to Harvard Business School and I took a leadership course mm-hmm. and I met someone who is in MIT Business School, someone running part of it. And I talked about the fact that like nowhere in there do they talk about how to network. It's not a class. It's not a course. It's not a priority to focus and get people to do that yet. I mean, how are you going to be successful unless someone teaches you how to do that? It's not just magic. It's a learned behavior of how you do these things. And I think that's the problem today, like in a lot of higher education, I find is that like you don't have the skill sets to be successful in whatever field that you're in, because the success metrics that people look at are not our quote unquote soft skills, right? They're mm-hmm. having empathy. Can you resolve conflict? Can you collaborate? Can you foster teamwork? Can you coach people? Well, nowhere in the educational system is that where they're teaching best practices and how to do that and how to like efficiently do that. So you're left with how to do accounting per se, right? Or how to do anything. Yeah. But you're not actually taught the skill sets that separate you out from the other people and make you really successful. I think networking or relationship building, however you want to put it, is one of those lost arts and sciences that needs to be taught in higher education.
Yeah, but that's amazing. You got your communication. You went to Syracuse, a pretty top-notch school.
It's the number one communication school. Some people know it's the number one TV, radio, and film school. So everyone in Hollywood goes through Syracuse. All the ESPN announcers all go to Syracuse. I mean, like, it's pretty much the president of CBS, MTV, everyone. So they have a sharing program. I think it's with USC or UCLA that actually all the students, like undergrads, and I went to grad school, but they come out to Syracuse for a semester, a year, to learn, because they, you know, get the best. Like Cone Nast Publications, like their family gave Syracuse all the money for the news communication school. So like, it's a who's who of what, but like, I went through a grad school program in communications and like no one talked to me about that. I went to law school and I didn't have one class that anyone even talked about.
That's amazing.
Part of a class.
That's amazing.
It's amazing, and that's why I think today, honestly, if I were to have like kids, and I don't have them, like if they did not go to like a top 15, top 10 school, and I had the money to send it to them, I would cobble together a higher education through a different multitude of ways, because you're not getting and learning the skill sets that you need to be successful, not only in business but in life. I think that's the problem.
Yeah.
You encounter problems in life, in relationships with other people, and you don't know what to do, and it causes you the most pain and problems in your life. Well, you know, again, today higher education does not cover those things, and the cost is ridiculous.
Oh,
right?
it is so ridiculous.
And it's skyrocketing up. I mean, I look at SMU University that's down the street from me. Tuition, room and board and books for 1 year. I mean, SMU is a good school, but it's not, I mean, maybe top 30 school. It's $67,000
in-state? So that's
not... it's a private school.
Oh, it's a private school.
$67,000 for 1 year of school. I mean, you're going out of there and it's costing you almost... And that's not going out, doing things. So you're looking at a probably $300,000 tab.
And a lot of these people, and not well, I shouldn't say a lot, and you probably know better than I. You know, some of these people, I mean, I have a graduate degree, and you know, but I'm in a different field. But a lot of these people with graduate degrees or undergrads, no matter what school, I mean, they're doing stuff that they didn't think they would be doing after college, correct?
Of course. I mean, how in today's world people are changing careers 3 to 4 times. I mean, how are you supposed to anticipate what you're going to be doing at, you know, 28 years old, what you're going to be doing in your mid-40s or mid-50s. I mean, that's impossible, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't have a person I know. Let's just say I have friends in law school. Most of the people I know that are in, like, law firms doing exceptionally well feel trapped. Now, there are some that don't, but most do, and they don't know how to get out. So
they're living a lifestyle. They're making a lot of money, but they're working 80 hours a week.
Yeah, and they don't like it, and they just have no choice, so they have to go through it. So the reality is they don't want to do what they're doing, but they don't know how to get out of it and do something else, and they made these choices. But they want to make a career choice. So the choice that they made in their 20s is not the choice that they would make now if they had other options, or they wanted to take other options, right? So like there's no way for you to anticipate in a world we live in what you are going to do next. That's why it's so important to have relationships with people, to have access to other people's networks, to start thinking about this, and then to invest in yourself and constantly be seeking out help, your self-development, personal development, and just being curious and learning on an ongoing basis. Because otherwise what happens at some point is you will hit a major valley, or you will hit your rock bottom multiple times. And I see this with every single person I work with, because people don't reach out to me unless they're in a lot of pain. And usually it is a mass amount of pain and colliding. Like it is like they're about to jump off a cliff, or they feel like the world is closing in around them. And it doesn't matter whether their net worth is, you know, 9 figures or whatever. It doesn't matter. It's pretty amazing that the same people feel the same way, whether they're making $50,000 a year or they're making $30, $40, $50 million a year. It's the same. It's just a different it's a different level, but the feelings are the same.
Well, I think you've hit on something really quick that I want to talk about just a little bit, where you're talking about people who make a lot of money. There's been studies out there, and you've probably seen these, and I think they've come up with 75,000 is the magic number. You know, and a lot of these studies indicate that once you hit that mark of 75,000, now people are different. Some people might like the fact that they're earning six or nine figures, but the studies I've seen, 75,000 is the magic number where people don't really feel that much different once they hit that plateau. I don't know if you've seen those before.
It's not, because what happens is, and I saw a CNBC study last year that talked about that if you make 2 million, you're spending 2. Mm-hmm. But if you make 20 million, they're spending 20. So basically what happens is that you feel like you're always trying to catch up to someone else.
Sure.
That, right? So you don't feel any different at no matter where you're at, because you're living at another level, because you feel like you're either not enough inside, or you're ashamed of something that's going on, or you're trying to compare yourself to someone who's ahead of you and trying to play catch up, right? Now there's a variety of things that people do.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of that all goes down to feeling like I am not enough, I am not worthy, or they feel like they're an imposter, right? Living in their own life. So that's a huge issue, no matter how much money you make, whatever you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I think across the whole of society, and it's mm-hmm. a very difficult ongoing challenge for people to deal with. And it's not even the people that deal with it, my clients, like you deal with it, but then you come up with it as you get to the next level in your life, right? So it's you have to continually go through this process of learning, growing, going through uncertainty, getting complacent, and then getting back out of your comfort zone again. And it's a constant process. It's not like it's a one-time deal.
Mm-hmm. No matter what profession a person is
in. No matter what you're doing. I don't care what it is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't care if you're a yoga instructor or you're, you know, a bank teller or an insurance person or CEO of a company or whatever it might be. It's the same thing. People are people. And at a core, we're all the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
We want to try to connect and belong. We want to feel like we have a purpose and a meaning, and we want to feel like we matter and are special in some way. And all those things come in conflict with the world around us and what other people want us to do and everything else that happens and the messages we're bombarded with and, you know, the programming and stuff that happens at an early age on. So it's a difficult process. And so people out there thinking like they're struggling, trust me, you're not alone. I mean, there's no one that's not struggling at some level, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even if they tell you that they're not, then maybe at that point they don't, but recently they have, or soon they will be. So
mm-hmm.
we're all in the same boat together.
Yeah, I read a great quote today that said, be kind, because everybody is carrying some sort of baggage. Everybody.
Yeah, everyone's insecure. I mean,
yeah.
I don't care what, that's. And I think that people who don't think that that's true, I mean, I'm going to give you a great example. A couple of years ago, and all this may seem funny, but I was out with a couple of my friends, and we were at a really nice upscale hotel bar, and a couple of my friends looked across and like, oh, these are really attractive women. And I was like, oh, those women are just as insecure as like what you're thinking to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, there's no way. Like, how could that possibly be the case? And I said, okay, I'll go show you. So I went to the bar and I just said hi and I just ordered a round of drinks for my friends. And then, you know, I looked at the woman next to me and I said, oh, you have some interesting shoes. And I just looked away, well, to get my drinks. And she grabbed my arm and she said, you don't like my shoes? That was the first response. All my friends heard that, right?
Wow.
And so I told them, you know, why I said it just, and it's a joke, and they laughed and, you know, got them some drinks and whatever. But the point of this is the fact that the people that we don't think that are insecure or have anxiety or worried about what other people are thinking or their life are the, you know, they are. And
mm-hmm.
That's why we're all together. And we try to isolate ourselves and think that we're different and that we're going through something by ourselves. It just depositions us and isolates us and makes us feel lonely, which actually makes the problem significantly worse. That's
mm-hmm.
why you need to, you know, reach out to other people and social groups, you know, entrepreneurial groups, professional groups, other people that are in your same walk of life or going down a similar path or whatever,
mm-hmm.
because they can show you empathy, which is extremely important to be successful.
Mm-hmm. Now, we all need to have purpose and vision, Jason. What happens when we lose it, or let me rephrase, how do we recapture it when it's lost?
Well, I think one of the problems is we have been told in our life that our purpose needs to be something external to ourselves. And what I mean by that is that it's something that we need to do, right? For instance, it may be like helping other people, or it might be, you know, making a lot of money. I don't care what it is. Well, the problem is when it comes to your purpose, is everything external to you will eventually let you down in life. I mean, whether it's people, whether it's a job, whether it's whatever, it just will. So you don't really have any control over your life and your existence. And so what happened for me, even in my job, I kept doing things because I just felt like I should be doing them. Mm-hmm. And then as I was getting coaching, I had a coach that started to explain to me purpose in another way. He's like, if you could generate the emotions that create the happiest times in your life, right, and go through it and think to yourself, like the couple of happiest times in your life, if you could take those emotions and you could recreate those on a daily basis, you would be living a significantly better life and another higher level. Because if your emotions in whatever you felt, like maybe it was whatever thing that you were thinking about was about freedom, adventure, you know, traveling, well, there's a reason why that was a happy time in your life. So maybe what it is that you need to find a job that you can travel and enjoy your life and
be fulfilled. Yeah.
Right. So one of the things that, I learned how to do, and just in a nutshell, was realize that your purpose is an emotion that you generate internally and then give off into the world around you. And it's much more motivating there, because if you understand that, then you're in control of your purpose every single day. Right. And you can not only do that, but you can help give and inspire the people around you, because you are living the emotions that set you on fire and get you excited every day, right? What I found out for me was connecting and belonging were my top emotions. And I was working in corporate America, you know, as like a VP of marketing. And the problem, and I found that my performance was really high when I was doing product launches or things that were external to the company, that I was meeting new people, having great conversations, but when I had to go work inside the company itself and do typical politics or just do things that where I didn't really have a lot of outside interaction, my success and productivity just nosedived. And I was living on this roller coaster up and down all the time, and really just living off the fact that my roller coaster could get really super high. But it wasn't what I loved to do. So then, you know, I figured out after a while when I did this that, you know, coaching was really more in alignment, because it was teaching other people how to do stuff. And for me, that was much more powerful. So when I figured that out and I could realize that connecting and belonging was how I could do it, was through this, well, then, you know, I'm happier all the time. And every time I, you know, go teach someone, go coach, I'm on a podcast, I'm doing almost anything, I feel the most alive. So that's the key. So if I were going to tell someone something, what I would do, the simple version of the exercise is to think back early in your childhood, as early as it comes back, and think about your four happiest memories in your life, right? And it doesn't matter whether they're all early or whether they start to become later. And then write down next to that memory the emotions that you're feeling, right? And you can get, you can just Google an emotions list, right? So if you're thinking, I don't know what I'm, you know, I can't, I don't know what's an emotion or not, just Google a list and look through it, and then put it to the right of each of the happiest memories. And then from there, what you do is you ask yourself, you just compare an emotions, right? You compare, you know, happiness to connection, and you say which one to you feels more important. And if you're stuck and you're saying, well, I don't know which one that is because it's really close, I would say, and I say to clients, okay, so does it, do you need to connect to be happy, or do you have to be happy to connect? And then you can find the answer, and you keep comparing it, and you go through the whole list twice, and then you figure out your top two emotions. And those are the emotions that you can look and say every day in your life, am I living those emotions? Is my job feeding into those emotions? And if not, then you need to start thinking about what could I do sick at having that. Is your family and social life feeding into those emotions? If they're not, then you need to find things that you can supplement it or raise larger questions about what is it that you're doing and the people that you're surrounding yourself with.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right? So if you can do that, then your emotions are a compass for you to tell you whether you're on the right path or not. And it helps make sure that you're moving forward and not trying to do something that's counter. Because what happens in our life then is then it's just by chance, right, that we recreate these happiest moments in our life. Because we just walk around and we hope that we're going to do that. Well, you know, hope's not a life strategy or a business strategy.
That's a very good point, yes.
It isn't, right? But if you're intentional about it, you can do it in a way. Now, you know, maybe I could have found a job being like an evangelist or something like this, and maybe that would have been – but I didn't really want to continue the corporate America because the internal politics for me eventually would have gotten – would have kept enough of my time away that I still would have been on some level roller coaster, right? So for me, that's what helped me figure that out. And it also helps me figure out if I'm sitting in my house for too long and I'm doing work and my mood goes down – I know that if I immediately go out with my friends or do something, my mood will go up because I know that connecting and belonging are the things that are most important to me, right? So I think that's the key. And when you figure this stuff out, then you are in much more control over what's happening in your life rather than haphazardly going through it or having other people dictate what goes on.
And sometimes you have to make difficult decisions, Jason, about who you surround yourself with. And sometimes those people are family, which makes it more difficult because I know I have, I mean, I think everybody, every family has some toxic people in the family. And I try to limit myself. And it's not that I don't love my, you know, those family members, but I try to limit, you know, that toxicity in my life.
Because here's the problem. I use my clients all the time, this line. So do you want to be right or do you want to be happy?
I want to be happy.
Right. Well, the problem is most people want to be right. And so when you're dealing with toxic people, they need to be right. So there is no reasoning with them and there's no letting it go. And you can, you know, bridge the topic and do other things. And I teach clients how to do all that stuff. But I say exactly what you're saying. You just need to limit your time with people like that. Because eventually they will bring you down because of the negativity that goes on. And you have to eliminate that. And there's no, you can't tell, you can have conversations with people, but it's very difficult for people to create any change in their life because they have to see that it's a major problem. And then they have to do major work on themselves in order to create new paradigms and shifts in how they're thinking and processing and living their life to get rid of those attitudes. That's why you just have a conversation with like, someone and tell them to do something and it magically will happen. It takes a lot of work to get someone to do something because all of the programming and habits that you've been doing millions of times solidify that information in your head. So it takes a conscious effort to do that, and it's really difficult.
Good stuff. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about business more. And what is the key, or why is creativity the key to innovation and leadership in business?
Well, the thing about it is that you have to do something that hasn't been done before. So you have to start thinking outside, you know, the proverbial box and being able to take leaps of faith. And that's the hardest thing in the world today, is that most people really don't foster creativity. They say they want you to be creative, but they want you to do it within their paradigm, and it's very limited. And I think you have to really, you know, watch that because, in essence, you know, being one of the things being an entrepreneur that I've learned, right, that it's taught me a lot, is life is not linear, right? In corporate America, it's like as a manager, a director, or a vice president moved up the ladder. Well, as an entrepreneur, there's no level like that. I have to lay little seeds along everywhere and lot dots, and all of a sudden, all these things like magically connect, and they do in a way that could take my income, you know, overnight from, you know, 2,000 to like 50,000 on something. Right. And you don't know when that's going to happen. So you have to realize the world is very nonlinear. And why that is that most people take a leap of faith. And the thing is, they get attached to the outcome. So let's say they go out in like in a social way, they want to meet people. They go out and they don't have the results they want. Then they make up a story around it, right? Or they're in business and they do something, whatever it might be, and they don't get the outcome that they get. Well, then they assume that they didn't know what they were doing, they're a loser, they're a failure. But the reality is that when you talk to successful people about the first time they do anything, and I've interviewed hundreds of highly successful people, and I found that every 5 to 7 new things that they do, they fail, and usually fail pretty miserably the first time they do it, right? I mean, every time. So what that tells you is that you have to start taking leaps of faith in life for the experience, not for the landing, because most of the time you are going to have to pivot. Meaning you're going to have to take what happened in that and learn from it and move forward. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem, that people don't do that and they just give up. Mm-hmm. And that's when you fail, right? Because you don't, there's no failure unless you actually stop.
Exactly.
And that's the key. And when it comes to anything in business that you're doing, right, or any job or anything, you are going to have to innovate, and that means that you are going to have setbacks. That means that things you're going to be doing are not always going to be working, but you are going to have massive breakthroughs and have way better results over time when you start to realize that not all experiences and not all things you do are going to work out the way that you want them to. But if you keep pivoting, you will eventually be highly successful. It's just you're stopping too soon.
Exactly.
And you are not allowing yourself to be successful in whatever it is that you're doing.
And that's great advice. And I tell people, as probably do you, that, you know, I mean, wildly successful people didn't just wake up. Bill Gates didn't wake up one day and was suddenly successful. To your point, Jason, he failed his way to success. And that's the difference between, like you said, successful people and people who aren't so successful, is most people will give up after the first failure.
I mean, you could also, even with Bill Gates, though, right? I mean, you could argue at some level, as successful as he was, really after Windows and some of the desktop stuff and Microsoft, I mean, almost everything else that they did wasn't really that successful.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, so.
But now the guy, he's the most wealthiest guy, one of the wealthiest guys in the world.
And he's investing in stuff, right? But then he created his nonprofit, right? Mm-hmm. And what happens when you create a nonprofit like that too, right? Here's the other magic about doing that. In life, when you lead with giving, right, within boundaries of people, with, you know, not giving so people take advantage of you, what happens is all these other doors open up for you. And people give you advice. They tell you investments at high levels. They want you to participate in other stuff. So that makes your wealth compound to levels that you've never seen before, right? Mm-hmm. That's why there are people that, I mean, in my opinion, I mean, if you have a couple $100 million, you should be a billionaire. And if you're not, the problem is that you are not building your relationships, because people hand you business deals at that point to make money, because there's not many people out there that are not takers at that level, right? And so it's
good point.
Right. So that's the key on how people like that keep making more money and being successful. It's actually not that hard at that level, because if you actually understand how to lead with giving and a lot of sort of, I'd say, next level principles and, you know, relationship building and doing other stuff, you separate yourself out from other people, and it's not that hard to do. And so people like that, it's really interesting to see their progression. But also, if you look at successful people like that, very few people do you see having multiple successes in their life. Usually they're living off of one massive success and then they're going on to other things. You know, Bill Gates is probably an anomaly because his foundation is so successful, and he was at, you know, what he did in the business world. That is not a normal, that is a high anomaly, even really successful people. You do not see people making that leap into doing multiple things as successful, or the second thing more successful than the first, or even.
But the point is that we can talk about Gates, Dell, Branson, you know, all kinds of highly successful people that people read about. And isn't it true, Jason, that they have failed to a large degree?
All the time. People fail. You know what the thing about it is that the problem in life is that we look at the end. We don't look at the journey.
Sure.
Right. Well, we look, and that's the problem. And that's why I would tell people that if you really want to understand success and see someone's journey, I have a client of mine, And he is really, really successful. And we've got him some business deals making him going to be ridiculously successful. But, you know, 20 years ago, when he was starting a company here in Dallas that he eventually is the chairman of, he was eating hot dogs and drinking Diet Coke for lunch for a year every single day. That's all he can afford. He was living in a rat trap, and he had an antenna that he had to fashion a coat hanger on, and the floors were shag rug. And that was all he had to do. And he said, you know, his power went out, and he couldn't pay his light bill. And he had to go down into some, like, you know, slum in the middle of the city and walk around after he had given up a job working at Trammell Crow here making $250,000.
Sure.
And, right? So, but no one asked that question to him. If I asked him, he said, like, no one asked me that ever. Right? They want to know. They look at him now. And that's the problem with success, is we don't look at the journey and ask the right questions, and therefore we just see what we want to see.
So walking around the room, Jason, you're going to give somebody advice. They're at a party, they're at a social event, and they want to create some relationships. They want to create some connections. What advice would you give somebody to work the room, like they say?
So I think that, you know, at a really quick level, there's three things that you need to do to build a relationship with someone for them to want to follow up with you or see you again. One is you have to build rapport. And you have to build enough common ground with them to find that they find something interesting that you both can relate to. The second thing is you have to be likable to the other person, right? Mm-hmm. And that easiest way to do that is through listening, because most people are not present. They're looking around the room. They're not active listening. They're talking too much, trying to sell themselves. When the reality is, if you only talk 30%, you're way ahead of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Because the topic people like to talk about the most is themselves, right?
Exactly.
And the third part of it is you have to build trust. And the way that you build the pair, I mean, if you look at all the research on trust, the number one way to build trust is through caring. And how you care about someone that you just meet is you try to help them in some form or fashion, right? Now, that could be something like you introduce them to someone else. You just try to help them in any way. And how I try to help people is I'll ask them on the rapport building side, you know, one of the first couple questions, I'll be like, so, you know, what are you passionate about in your life right now? So what projects are you working on if it's a business setting? Or I might ask them, so what's exciting that's going on in your life right now? Because now what happens is if I ask them that, I can dovetail into what it is that they care about the most, so I can connect to them in their heart on an emotional level, which is the key on a subconscious level to connect to someone. It's the strongest connection you can make. And you can make it pretty instantly because you can just relate to almost anything someone says when it comes to that. And you can ask them some follow-up questions, and then you can ask them about that. Say, so you have any challenges with that? Do you need any help with that? I mean, and they'll probably relate something, and you may be able to send them a contact, a book, an article, or something else, even if you don't know what it is, or something, right? You could even say, hey, you know, I get a lot of events and invited places. Let's exchange information. I'll just send you the next event I'm going to, right? Or maybe invite them out to brunch that you're going with a couple friends or even family members or something else that they can meet some new people. So whatever that might be, that's the key, because when you do that with people, you lead with giving.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is psychologically is the only people that lead with giving with individuals are people that are in their inner circle, meaning really close family members, a business partner, colleagues. Someone that's very close to them. Well, even though you're an acquaintance, you put yourself in that place. So people start to prioritize you and put you there when it makes absolutely no sense. And I know this works because when I came to Dallas and I started doing things, I just experimented because I didn't really – there wasn't a book that taught you how to put all this stuff together. So I started doing these things, just experimenting, right? And things – some went right, some didn't. But what I did was I'd have people after meeting them like two or three times, and I would barely tell them anything about me, would introduce me to people saying, hey, Jason's like the greatest guy, or Jason's the mayor of Dallas, or Jason's like one of the best people I've met. And I thought to myself, well, this has to be wrong. They have to be lying, because there's no way. I've talked to them probably maybe 20, 30 minutes or maybe more, but I probably talked to them about 5 minutes or less about me. They know absolutely nothing about me. They don't know where I'm from.
But it's about – you made it about them, which is the key.
I made it about them, right? So
yeah.
So that I made them feel special. I validated who they were. And because of that, and people don't do that, you stand out amongst everyone else because 99% of the other people are worried about trying to sell themselves and make themselves look good. Well, when you do the opposite of what 99% of the people do, that is the keys to massive success. And so, and it's a lot less work.
Sure.
Right. In order to do anything like that. And if you're an introvert, it's even easier because you don't have to carry a conversation. You just have to ask questions.
That was going to be my next question is what do you tell people who there's a lot of people out there who are shy. You're an extrovert. I'm an extrovert. We love talking. But what advice do you give people who are introverts?
I just tell them, look, it's difficult and it's going to take you outside of your comfort zone. So you have to accept that and be okay with that and realize that all growth happens outside your comfort zone and other people where you're comfortable are going to be uncomfortable. And that's just life, right? Secondly, I say that you have to manage your social schedule in a way that an extrovert does not. So what that means is saying you need to look at your calendar and plan your social events and things that you're doing so you can recharge your battery and feel not like you're just running out of energy all the time. So that's the key. Mm-hmm. The third thing is that there's better ways of managing your schedule by going to different places that you should go to. And the best places to go to are charities, nonprofits, meaning the arts, or interest groups, meaning a running club or something else like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because things that are nonprofits and other charity events, what happens there is that people lead with giving. So it's much easier to meet people because everyone's there for a reason, right? And in the interest group, you know something or want to learn that. So that's a deep core common ground that you have with people, right? So that helps a lot. Well, when it comes to a charity or nonprofit event, I tell an introvert, and I've had clients like this, in the past, not so much now, would we do stuff on a higher level, but I'll tell them, well, look, go contact the organizers of running the charity or nonprofit event, ask them to work the check-in table, sit at the front desk, ask for the earliest shift. Because you can meet some of the people that are in the organization. They'll be grateful for the help because no one volunteers. And then you can meet people as they walk in. You have a reason to say something to them because they have to check in. Well, once you leave the check-in table, you're going to feel a lot more comfortable because you're having interactions with people. And people assume that you're a part of the organization. So you actually are a de facto social ambassador for that night. Well, now you can go meet people for the second time. And it's much easier to start a conversation at that point with them. So for people that are introverted or socially awkward or shy, like that's a gold mine. And every person I've ever had doing it, even people that are really, really extreme like that have been successful because other people carry the conversation for you because they're grateful that you're like, wow, that person's volunteering and doing something
like that. That's a good
point, yeah. Like I would, and they think to themselves, like, I'm not doing that. Like they must really, that's awesome that they take the time to do this and they care. And so, and that's a story other people make up, but a story that serves you really well. And so that's an easy way to start doing things and building relationships with other people. And do it in a way that's quick. Because most of these charity events and stuff like this, or even an interest group, would they last an hour or two?
Sure.
You don't have to sit out there 3, 4, or 5 hours, right? That's not a way that you need to manage it. So that's an easy way for people to do it.
Now, shifting gears again, why do you think, Jason, that leadership is lacking in so many organizations? You indicated you left the corporate world. I don't know if it was due to leadership. What is your take on that?
Well, one of the biggest problems right now, because I'm actually working and been doing research on this thing for like 8 months, is I lack in engagement, right? The Gallup poll does the biggest surveys of like corporations, and the number one problem is lack of employee engagement. It's up to like 70% of U.S. workers are checked out, and it's costing U.S. businesses $550 billion a year. And the reason is that people feel disconnected to the organization because as executives and CEOs, they don't prioritize the people problem as the number one problem, building a culture on that. And Google spent money and they did this project called Project Aristotle, and they did it for 3 years and they spent several million dollars getting all these researchers in, and it took them several years to figure out how to build high performing teams because they wanted to understand how do we model and build high performing teams in every team, because we're going to up level performance across the company in a major way and create a lot more innovation. But it was really hard because they could not find stuff. And the number one reason that they found was psychological safety. And that is, and every single team that had that performed better, brought in more revenue, was more successful. And for Google, for every team that was at the top, twice as many executives would call them out for outstanding work, right? And at Google, that's a pretty impressive thing. So what psychological safety is feeling vulnerable, right? And being authentic in your communications with people. And it's also feeling that you can call out other people and express your beliefs without getting ridiculed or any repercussions against it. So what happens is then people can speak their mind, right? And do it in a respectful, collegial way.
Sure.
In teams, people would come forward with better ideas. They would share things. They would rip apart bad ones, and everyone would feel part of the team because ultimately whatever came up with, everyone put input in, right? Well, that's the problem today in corporate America, is that there's not ways for you to set up to create psychological safety in these teams and groups. And what happens is people don't feel connected and belonging inside of it. And so then they feel disengaged, right? And part of it is that you spend most of your waking hours in business and thinking, right? So when I think, I talk about that, it's not how many hours you're physically at work or doing work. It's when you're thinking about work. I call that like all your waking working hours. Well, you know, that's basically the majority of the time. So if you don't have friends at work and you don't have really good relationships and aren't able to be yourself at work, well, then what happens is you feel like you're an imposter and you aren't yourself. And that causes a lot of problems internally, right? And then it causes disengagement in organizations. And so that's the key. And I think that's the problem in leadership, right? Because I just was going through one of my clients, and he was, I mean, it was a problem dealing with a major business unit on a margin problem, right? Not making enough margin. Well, I talked to the leader in the business unit, and after I got off the phone with him, and it was actually just it lined up this way. I found all these people problems that were going on that were definitely part and parcel of the reason that they were not being as productive. And when I talked to the CEO of the company, and you know, I was like, look, let me give you five things. I'm like, these things are all off. So in order for you to solve your problem, which I'm trying to do, I've got to fix this, because you're dealing with the leaf on the tree, not the root cause. It's all people problem, right? It's managers not talking to each other. It's leaders who are being negative and talking behind each other's back. It's not in all like other things that were happening that I found out that I, when I was digging down deep, that are part of the root problem. So that's a culture issue.
Sure.
Because that's being tolerated, right? Well, that hurts the performance numbers. That's there's a reason why Google is doing as well as it is. It's not just chance. It's not the fact that they give away all the stuff.
No.
It's nice and all the perks, but you know, the key thing is they're building a culture around ways to create connecting and belonging for people, so they feel validated, they feel special, they feel needed, they feel wanted, they feel like they're living their purpose.
Exactly.
They feel like they're going to work every day, and they're surrounding themselves with people who care about them, and they have a best friend or best friends at work. So they have a social circle that's very tight inside of that office, and that's what propels you to do great things. It's not everything else. And that's what I think that's what I think in corporate America, the people are not getting. Now, I think you're seeing researchers like Brené Brown come out, talk about vulnerability, authenticity, and leading with it and being a part of it. And you're starting to see more of it. But the problem is, how do you integrate it into the culture? And how do you make it? And that right now is a question. There's really no one who, in my opinion, is even, I think Google, I've talked to HR people, and I've seen some of the stuff that they run through, and I think it's really good, but I don't think it's revolutionary, but it's very difficult to build this connection and belonging. I mean, it's not,
but they value their human capital, which is the most important aspect of any organization.
And they embody in the values, in the actions, in everything that goes on. And that's the difference. Most people talk about it, but they don't really live it. That's the thing, right? It's kind of like say one thing and do the next. And that is what happens in corporate America and, you know, middle market businesses, small, I mean, all the way across the board. And that is, that's the problem that leadership is lacking right now. And I think when leaders get presented with this stuff, because they're not thinking about it, they don't push back when I bring it up, because I can bring up tangible things. And they're like, okay, but if those people are arguing and not collaborating and getting along, well, then there's a problem. Because, right? And then they say yes, and then they look at themselves and I say, well, that's costing you a lot of money. You realize that, right?
Sure.
And then they say yes, and I'm like, okay, well, if you have 800, 1,000, 1,200, 15, whatever, and you have that all of your organization, do you not realize that's costing you tens or hundreds of or billions of dollars? That's your problem.
And this isn't just applicable to the private sector, Jason. This is very applicable to the public sector, to law enforcement, criminal justice. I mean, it's pervasive.
Justice, definitely. It's happened. I mean, there's no organization that's they did this on teachers that teach, and they found the same thing. I mean, it doesn't matter where you are, what's going on. Everyone wants to feel connected and belonging. And what happens is you feel isolated and lonely most of the times, right? And then, you know, they said like 42% of people don't have a friend at work. Well, all right, good luck.
Wow.
If you're in that business, you are very producing way under what you could. The amount of money that you're making is a fraction of what could be brought in the door if you fostered it. Because it just makes sense. I mean, you're going to be more excited every day to walk into work if you're around people that you like and care about and that motivate you and what's going on and lift you up. And when you're having personal problems, there are people there to lift you up, because that's the other thing that people don't realize, right? So I have executives that are going through personal problems. I mean, the impact on the organization is massive, but no one does anything about it, right? I mean, it's lip service, right? And people care and they talk to them, but they need to do more than that. They need to get them help. They like,
sure.
It cost $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. If you have a CTO of a company who's going through a divorce, like, you need to get that person support and help, because it's affecting the work product. Now, at any level it is, right? So, and there are different things that you can do for people, but the key is that we're not thinking about the culture and the human capital and just people as individuals and caring enough to find out how can we create an environment that is how they meet and interact with people outside the office, inside the office. And until that happens, you're going to see this problem continue to grow in scale. And also, even if it flatlines now, I mean, it's so massive that it's affecting people way, and the companies that can solve it are going to grow exponentially regardless of how much market share that they have today. It's it's like the holy grail to influence your results, whether your company's making $100,000 or, you know, $100 billion. It doesn't matter. The same problem is there.
And eventually those companies, I don't care if you have the best widget out there, if you are not investing in your the human element, if you're not taking care of the people, the business of people, the business of business is people. You know that. I don't care if you're clients. I don't care if it's internally. If you are not taking care of your people, I think your business is ultimately doomed.
Oh, it always is, right? I worked at Hewlett Packard, right? And
yeah.
I mean, and that was a great business, and that business is cratered, right? It's a little thumbprint of what it used to be, and also respect level and everything else. Why? Because they just gutted the company and everyone knew it and treated people poorly. And then ultimately you can't ever go back once you do that amount of damage in an organization. It's pretty much just done, right? I mean, you know, you can make it be successful at some level, but you'll never reach the levels that it was before. It just, you just can't. And that's a huge problem. And it's really difficult to teach people this information, right? And I think what we have to do in order to change that is people have to be agents of change in their own organization to bring information like that to
exactly
people and get them to think and proactively you know, talk to people and share this with your managers, with colleagues, and do things with them. And it's pretty true. I mean, even if you go and do social activities inside of your like group of people, right? And if you look at your performance and the next quarter or two, watch and keep doing activities and bring it to your boss saying, you know what, the bottom line's going up because people here are feeling a lot better and they're much more connected. And there's a reason why, right? So why isn't the company do this across the board, right? And I think and people will start to listen to you because it makes – they'll push back initially because they'll think, oh, what has this got to do with anything? But then when you start talking about it, well, don't you work with better with people that you like and know and trust? And they'll say yes. And I'm like, well, that's what happens when you do things socially with people, right? Because outside of work, do you do things with people you hate? No. So that's the same way here. People want to work with people that they actually like. They'd rather work with their friends than they work with people that are acquaintances.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, but I'm just saying, just like you would go, like just a person who's listening to this, if you go home at night on a weekend, you'd rather be doing things with your friends, right? Or even friends that you make, like in the future, than people that you barely even know. If that were the two choices to do something with, right? And that's the same way, right? Well, if you're working every day with people, you want to be having more people that your friendships are.
And you want to get rid of those people that are detrimental to the success of the – what do they say? You want to be slow to hire and quick to fire. I hate to be so blunt. But you want to get rid of those people in the organization that are not pushing that organization to the next level.
Right, and it's very difficult to do that if you don't have a connected organization, because what happens is that those people actually help drive out the other people.
Mm-hmm.
Because the because then what happens, they become outliers. Because even if they're high, because the hardest thing what you'll see in organizations is, and people probably have seen people like this, they're very high performing, right? You've seen high performing people that are either really good in sales or really good in their job, but they're very toxic and they don't buy into the visions and values and they're outliers and they show up late or they don't do ever, but whatever they do it really good. Well, people put up with that because the fear is if we lose that person, it's going to hurt the organization. Well, that fear goes away if it's more connected and more, because more people are performing at a higher level. And then the other people go complain and they actually stand up and say, no, we're not tolerating that type of activity in this office because that's not right. But people don't, when they don't feel like that and they're not empowered. So then those people who are really toxic continue on, and then eventually something really bad happens because eventually those people will cause it. I mean, it's inevitable. I see this happen all the time in businesses, and you sometimes they get lucky and people leave at that level or a lawsuit comes and they can give money and it gets shoved under the table. But eventually, it all comes to a roost, right? Well, that's the key. You can't self-police and have people do that if you don't have a culture in which people feel like they get cared about and they're special and they feel connected and they feel like they belong to people that are there. Just won't step up and do it. They'll just go through the motions and really they'll probably just leave. Which, you know, you look at all the data, it costs you 1 to 3 times that person's salary to replace the person that leaves. So it's really expensive when you have turnover. And people never look at that either. And that's an engagement problem, because people don't leave for more money. They leave for other reasons than that. That happens all the time.
What I've always talked about, you know, or I've always been taught, that people don't leave organizations, Jason. People leave people. Is that a correct statement to make? I mean,
yes, because think about it this way. If everyone in the audience was offered $25,000 more to leave, they're probably thinking that's a lot of money. But after taxes, what is it, $16,000, $17,000? That's like $1,500 a month. Are you really going to go to another organization that you don't like and every day have to wake up and spend all that time? Or would would you stay in the organization that you absolutely love and get excited and motivated about, right? And probably you could bring that conversation up about your market value being under, and I'm sure that they would find a way within a short period of time, now maybe it's a year or whatever, to make it up so that number's significantly less and it's noise. But you're happier, you're motivated, and you're excited rather than having to go to a new place just because you're doing it for money.
Exactly. Exactly. Can you tell us a little bit about your book, sir? Social Wealth.
So I wrote the book originally because I found that people were just really struggling building great relationships, right? And I led it with building business relationships, but I cover social relationships inside of it as well, because it's really one and the same. I mean, most of it overlaps one another. And the other part of it is that I was looking and reading other books, and they were, you know, 250, 300 pages, a lot of examples. They're really difficult to use, and I wanted to write a blueprint, so I wrote it in like under 150 pages that people could use, get through quickly, and implement either by reading the whole thing or reading a chapter and just getting results, because it's something that I did my clients. I'm out out all the time. I mean, I did a lot of research. I interviewed, you know, a lot of super successful people. Like I interviewed the financial editor of Today Show, the number one hockey expert in the world, a business partner with Gwyneth Paltrow. Like, I mean, all research, New York Times, best time sellers list, and other people, and just to try to see how they were successful and how they were building relationships outside of other people, and then took that information and make it in a way that people could just do pretty easily, right? I go and say, here's how you start a conversation. This is what you say, right? Not, well, here's the things that you could talk about. I've actually given quotes what to say, so people don't have to sit there and think, well, I'm not sure what words to use, because then people make excuses for why they can't do it. I'm going to try to eliminate that, and also do some, you know, I go through some other, you know, personal development things in the psychology of how people think through it, so people can better understand why they are where they're at, and that they're not alone, and that everyone's struggling. And the fact is that anyone can learn to do this stuff better, because social communication and emotional skill sets are all learned behaviors, and everyone can get dramatically better than they are. I mean, massively better. They just have to do it. It's kind of like going to the gym. I mean, if you want to go work out, you have to eat better and you have to work out. Now, if you decide to eat better 2 days a week and work out 1 day a week, I mean, you're really not going to see any results. Well, it's the same thing here. Now, you don't really have to do that much work, meaning you might have to go out, you know, one organization a week, just start talking to some more people, saying hi to the people as you open the door for them, say hi to cashier. I mean, like, there's simple things to do that you're already doing anyways, because you're standing there, you're just not talking to people. And if you start doing those things, you can get significantly better. And again, you know, no one has a tombstone that said they worked a good life. It's all about our relationships, right?
Exactly.
Because our relationships create the experience that we have. So for me, it was something, you know, a labor of love, and also I thought something that was really important for people. And, you know, and the book's done really well, and it's got a lot of great reviews from people, and, you know, I think people find it really successful to get them far enough along the road to really building these relationships up in whatever environment that they're in.
Excellent advice, Jason. If people want to reach out to you, sir, where can they find you?
So they can go to my website. It's Jason Treu. It's JasonTreu.com. And I have a new website that I've just launched, and there's a lot of stuff on there. There's also a free ebook I just created on how to build influence with other people, and authentic influence, so you can really get more out of your life, whether that's in business or your relationships. And through that, you're just helping other people. So I try to take some best practice tips that I teach my executive clients with, and things that they're doing exceptionally well, and just put it in the book and just give it away, right? I could easily charge for the stuff that's in the book.
Sure.
But you know, it's a quick read, and people can implement the stuff, you know, by reading strategy one, immediately go do it or whatever they want and flip through it. So.
Well, Jason, I know you're very busy, sir. I appreciate so much you taking the time to come onto this podcast. Any other tips and advice really quick that you'd like to give the listener?
I would just say, take, you know, three things this week to take action on, right? That's outside your comfort zone. That's something that you've always wanted to do, right? And maybe it's that you're introverted and not talking to people. Well, then set the goal that this week I'm going to talk to one new person every day, even if that's talking to the cashier at a 7-Eleven or the grocery store and asking them how their day is and asking one more question. And if you can do some more small, tiny things like that, that are really what happens is that's how you get better results. Because the thing about life is we need to get evidence, because evidence gives us the confidence that we can do it because we're getting results. And so if you start something and like go to the gym and say, I'm going to go 6 days a week, and then you go five, well, five is successful. But if you set the goal of six, you look at it as a failure. So you don't set really small goals and incrementally build farther up. And, you know, the best way to do is just make a commitment to try to do three things in the next week, and you'll do it, because people, if you commit to yourself to doing it, you'll find a way.
And I think it was Margaret Thatcher who said, do something every day that scares you.
Yes. And something really small, right?
Exactly.
People try to pick these big hairy goals. And I'm like, no, just do something super small that makes you feel uncomfortable.
Sure.
That may take 30 seconds to do. So you don't have to sit there and dread it all day long, or it have to be some activity that's going to take you too long, because that's where resistance builds up.
Well, Jason, I appreciate you coming on the podcast, sir. Best success with all you're doing. And I have no doubt you're already massively successful. You're going to have much more success.
Well, thanks for having me on.
All right, Jason. Take care.
Thanks for listening to CJ Evolution. Be sure to head over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast, and reach out to Patrick on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Anchor, or Snapchat. We'll see you next time on CJ Evolution.